Welcome to the Ultimate Guide to Student Mental Health series. My name is Christina Broderick, and I'm the CEO and founder of Ignite EDU, where it's our vision that every student can learn, build, and strengthen their mental health foundation along their educational journey. In this series, we're going over mental health in different parts of students' lives. And today we're talking about mental health in the community. And today we have Joy, who's going to talk to us about all the different parts that exist for students with mental health in their communities. So before we dive in, Joy, just give us an introduction to who you are, what you're about, all that good stuff.
Okay. So my name is Joy Britt. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm from New York City, and I am the founder and CEO of my own private practice called Life Intentionally Psychotherapy Services, which is located in Westchester and now remotely because of COVID. And I'm also the host of the Joy of Social Work podcast.
Love it, love it, love it. So before we dive into where we are at today, just talk to us about like your experience growing up with mental health, and then what kind of got you into this working with students and just working with mental health in general.
Okay. So I guess growing up, it was kind of like, I grew up in one of those, like, don't talk about what goes on in the house kind of homes. And so my mom was diagnosed with a chronic illness called scleroderma when I was like 13. And it was kind of like, things really changed in the house. I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't talk to friends. I couldn't have friends over. And it was just like the real shift. And I felt like I needed to talk about it, but it was like, you can't talk. So in high school, I got very frustrated one day and I like had outbursts and it turned into, like, you need to go talk to the counselor. And it just became a thing that I did the rest of high school. It made me feel really comfortable. I knew I had a space that I could share my feelings and stuff. And so then when I got to college, it was like, well, what am I going to do with my life? Like, what am I supposed to be majoring in? And I got a postcard and it was like, do people come to you for advice? Do you enjoy talking to people? I'm like, oh yeah, I like that. Then I became a human service major and then it kind of just grew from there. I decided to go get my master's in social work, and then I've, you know, worked with families, I've worked in schools, and now I'm on my own.
So give us a little bit more insight into your story, because you have a pretty interesting story, and I think it's really important for, I think, some people to hear differing parts of people's journeys, so if you don't mind sharing your story.
Sure. So I think, like, I mean, we all have a story that all started, like, the day you were born. But I feel like my story kind of started, like, almost 11 years ago now. So, like I said, my mother was diagnosed with an illness when I was 13 and had been sick for years. When I was 25, though, 4 days after my birthday, my mom called me and told me that she thinks that my dad is dead. And I was very confused. I was like, what do you mean? He's not a sick person. He's doing well. So I go over to their house. I had just recently moved out. I go into their house. He wasn't alive. And it was just kind of like, in that moment, I realized, like, death is final.
Like, he was, like, in bed.
He was in bed, and it was like, he was just, like, kind of hard. We were trying to, like, wake him up. He wasn't waking up. 911 was on their way. But it was just like, oh, man, like, death is really final. And, like, what do I do now? I don't have a parent. And my other parent is sick. It was just this, like, real hard hit for me. Then a little less than 2 years after that, my mom passed away. And so now it's like, okay, now I have both parents and it's just kind of like navigating life on my own. But I will say, I do think that it was something that pushed me to like do more. I think I was very much like, I'm going to just like, I didn't really want to get a master's. When I decided to get a master's, it was kind of like, I need to get a job doing more. So that happened, but like even like with career, I just wanted to just like go do have a 9-to-5. I didn't want to, I would have never imagined then that I would like have my own business at all. So my mom passes away. A few years later, I get into a relationship, I start dating, and then he passes away in 2017. And it's like, come on, God, like another thing. Like
that's so rough.
It's like this is just another thing to have to deal with. But I'm really grateful because I do have, like, a great support system. My friends are really great, my family. But it was just kind of like, how do you, and people ask me a lot, like, how do you keep going with all of these things? And it's just kind of like, I tell my story, I share my story, which is why I started the my podcast, is because it helps other people. And I think the more people that are like, oh, well, that inspired me, it makes me be like, I have to keep doing this. Like, I have to keep going. And then now with having a business and, like, my clients and stuff, you know, they don't know these things about me. But it's interesting to be able to, like, pour and like pour into them and help support them through the things that they're going through.
It must be hard also. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
It must be hard for you being the mental health professional and learning and then like having to also go through this yourself, right?
Yeah, because it's like, well, I know that I can be depressed. I know that I can be anxious. Yeah. And it's like navigating my own mental health in this, while doing the work with other people. Yeah. Which was kind of challenging. I'll be honest, when my boyfriend passed away, I was working at a high school, and teenagers require a lot. I took some time off work, but when I came back, some of them were like, I mean, I know something happened, but I needed you. And it was like, you guys are selfish.
Sometimes they're trying to be cute and be funny, but also like they're dead serious sometimes.
They're so serious. They were like, so can I have a session today? I'm like, I just came back to work. No, I don't want to talk to anybody. So like that. And then, and like in understanding that for me, I needed to then make a change because that age group then was too hard to work with at the time. Yeah. So I went to elementary school, which
that was a better option.
Yeah.
Let's go to the younger babies.
Let's go work with babies, right?
Who don't know how to regulate their emotions at all.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So then what led you then wanting to have your own business, right? Working with the community and kind of being able to be in that space.
Yeah. So that was always something like my friend, she is a social worker, but she doesn't practice anymore. She's a teacher now. But she and I always were like, we're gonna start our own private practice. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, I'm not being a social worker anymore. So I'm like, but this is a thing that I really want. And I think working for people and, you know, when like folks make decisions and you're like, that's probably not the best way to do that. Or they don't really understand mental health.
Yeah.
In schools and in even hospitals, you know, in a lot of different places where there are social workers, the people who make the decisions don't necessarily understand what it is that we do.
Yeah.
So I just kind of felt like, why am I pouring so much into other people's dreams if I can do this thing myself? Mm. And it's just kind of like talking to my own therapist and being like, I really want to do this thing. And her being like, why can't you? And I'm like, I don't know.
That's what my therapist said to me too. She was like, you can do this by yourself. Like, you are fully capable. And I was like, I don't think I am. She's like, you literally are.
Yeah.
She's like, low-key my business coach sometimes.
Yes, same. I love my therapist.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to look up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And then so now she's like, look at you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, thank you. You're right. You didn't think you could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So with your experience working with students, right? Mm-hmm. So what are you seeing when it comes to like services, when it comes to community connections? What are some of the things that you have been noticing within your experience in the education space?
Right. I think the biggest thing is like it varies from location to location and like how much resources are in the community.
Have you always been in New York?
I've always been in New York, yeah. So, but different parts of New York, different boroughs. So when I was working uptown in like Washington Heights area, Inwood, Manhattan, there were more resources for young people and more money was being funded for like after school programs. And the high school that I worked at actually had a wood shop. So like kids had opportunities to help the teacher, you know, sell furniture, and they would make us cutting boards all the time, like things like that. But then in the community that I just was working in Brooklyn, not as much services. But there were some, you know, like there were still programs that came and picked up the kids and took them to like different trips, and they had like a swimming program and things like that. But what I did notice is that there's some in New York City, at least in certain communities, in communities of color, there are lacks of services.
Especially mental health services, would you say?
Yeah. There's not enough people doing the work, I guess, and so then there's always like waiting lists and things like that. Yeah,
and it's interesting because I think there are things out there, but for people who are trying to like refer, it can get complicated.
It can
get very complicated in trying to like navigate it all and figuring it out.
Exactly.
You know? Here we have in Jersey something called like Perform Care.
Oh, nice.
Which is
sounds nice. I don't even know
what it is. I know, right? You're like, oh, great.
That sounds like a dozen things.
Essentially, I guess it's like a hub, right? You kind of like start there and then they listen to whatever's going on and then they kind of disseminate out into the community, right? Whatever type of services, right? So it's kind of like a central spot where they try to like, you know, get the information and then they take it over and they say, okay, we're going to connect you to this place, right? So that has been pretty helpful. But what on the opposite end gets challenging is, I don't know if sometimes the services do a good enough job with the actual community members, like parents, understanding it.
Right.
So I think that's where sometimes I found a disconnect where, like, in the school, we know what to do. We can, like, help refer out. But then right. the parents are like, what is that? I don't want anybody in my house. I don't want to let it
yeah.
up. Right? And you're just like, what are we supposed to do?
It's like, this is an in-home service. And they're like, nope.
Yep. But then they also don't want to drive them somewhere or take
right,
them somewhere.
Right, right.
So I'm like, well, we're only in school a certain amount of hours. Mm-hmm. I can only see your child a certain amount of time.
Right.
In order for this to really be beneficial and for your child to really get this help, this is how we need to, this is what this can look like, right?
Right.
Has that been your experience in New York and stuff?
Yes, very mm-hmm. similar. And even like, well, can we bring it to the school? If we bring it to the school, will you come?
Yeah.
And that has helped. That has
okay,
helped
good.
A lot. Yeah.
Good.
So we would have people from the community agencies mm-hmm. or even like there was a local hospital that they would come and they would do like workshops and stuff. But then the other part is like getting people to buy into it.
Yeah.
And then timing, you know.
Yeah, it's a whole.
If I work, can I come?
Mm-hmm. You know. It's a whole to do.
Yeah.
And it's the importance of all of it being so connected,
mm-hmm.
right? It can't just be like the social worker working with like the service. Like it has to be the principal. It has to be like the
right.
dean. It's like all of this stuff.
Exactly.
Students they don't exist in silos. They don't have to exist in bubbles, right? There has to be this connection. That connection right. is important. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned earlier when mm-hmm. you talked about like kind of like what happens in the home stays in the home, right?
Right.
Like that infamous phrase. How has that shaped your experience in working with students, with parents with that mindset? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
So different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, and I think probably the most frequent is that parents then don't want the kid to talk to the social worker.
Yeah.
Or only you can talk to my child.
Right.
Don't let anybody else talk to
mm-hmm.
them. I don't want the teacher talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just you. And so then the kid sometimes becomes like, hi, I need to go talk to you all the time.
Right.
Because I have this thing. And it's like explaining to them like appointments and like
right.
that I can't talk to you all day every day mm-hmm. because you're having a feeling.
Right.
And teaching them how to navigate those
right.
feelings so that they can kind of self-regulate.
Yeah.
To,
yep. Manage it themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's been like that, or parents that are like, they can't talk to anybody at all.
Right.
I mean, there's been parents who've taken kids out of the school because they're like, you guys are too involved. And it's like, we're trying to help. And
yeah.
then, but you also have to understand, like, everybody doesn't see the help the
yeah.
same way, so.
Yeah, and I've experienced that too, mm-hmm. and it's hard, right? The kids are coming to us with some real stuff.
Yeah.
And you call the parent. And you're like, you know, hey, oh, don't worry, I'll talk to them or I'll figure it out. Oh, well, they didn't tell me that, so I don't believe it.
Right.
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 Or, you know, kind of going back to the services, it's trying to hook them up with services. Well, I don't want that. I don't want to deal with services.
Mm-hmm.
Or, well, oh, sometimes, like, you know, the parents be involved. Well, my kid can get it, but I don't want anything. Nothing's
right.
wrong with me.
Nothing's
I'm fine.
Right? You're trying to say I'm a bad parent.
Right,
but,
right,
yeah.
right. I'm not crazy. I'm not a whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how do we start then to, at least for that portion, what does it look like to start changing that narrative?
For me, I try to like normalize it as much as possible. Like
mm-hmm.
whatever I can do, like we're sitting here having a conversation. Like I try to tell the parent, like
mm-hmm.
we're having a conversation. This is kind of like therapy.
Yeah.
Even though you don't feel like we're not laying on a couch, it's not, I don't have a notebook and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
feel intimidating. Us having this conversation is what I'm going to do with your child,
right.
what I'm going to do with you, what somebody else who I refer you to is going to do. And
right.
it's just trying to get to understand the root of what's going on
mm-hmm.
so that we can help support you in finding resources
right.
or give you the tools so that you can do it on your own.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be very invasive and it doesn't have to feel like someone's just all in your business and wants to know too
right.
much about you.
Right, right. So then how do we tackle religion? Because it's always a fun, not so fun thing to talk about when it comes to mental health, right?
right?
When you hear the just pray about it,
right?
You just need
just read
to
the Bible.
Read the Bible, mm-hmm. right? And growing up for me, I religious. We went to church,
yeah.
like that, right? But my grandma was definitely very religious. Like she's never had nail polish, right?
Oh.
Because she said the Bible says you shouldn't alter your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
She didn't do. Her ears never pierced. No
yeah.
nail polish. So definitely,
like
yeah, right.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and I think my grandma, my paternal grandmother,
yeah.
Like that,
and it's a little weird, right? And how that continued to like perpetuate within communities.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you, what have you seen, at least in that regards,
right.
when it comes down to mental health and religion?
It's just exactly what you said. Yeah. Like, well, God has me. I don't need to talk to anybody else. I could just pray. I could just read the Bible. If I read a scripture a day, my anxiety will go away. And I'm like,
a scripture a day makes the anxiety go away. I mean, you could try it.
But in addition to,
right,
let's add something else. So, right. But it's been that resistance of like, well, God's going to take care of me. I don't need to talk to anybody else. Yeah. Or even like, actually in my own family, I have cousins who have mental illness, and another relative is like, well, that's not real. And I'm like, what do you mean? That is very real. That what they're experiencing, like the things that you're seeing are real.
Right.
Like that is like, they're not making this up. This is not attention.
Yeah.
Like they have a thing going on.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's because they did drugs. And I'm like,
what?
I mean, maybe like if they were on drugs in this moment, I could see that.
Right.
Or like maybe there's some effects. But I think that there's something bigger than this.
Right.
But I think then for some people that means admitting that there is a mental illness in their family and that God didn't take that away.
Yeah.
Because they're super religious. She's super religious.
And I see that with kids, as you kind of say that, where parents may say, like, oh, they're just doing this for attention. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, and you're just like, even if it is. What's so wrong with getting them some help?
Yeah.
Like, why to help with that attention-seeking behavior then, right? If that's what it is. But I think it becomes an attack on them, right? Yeah. If there's something wrong with my kid, it's an attack on me and my parenting.
Right, right.
And having to kind of separate that. And I think, I'm curious, maybe you know, I don't know where it came with religion, where like, that there are these things, that it has to be so mutually exclusive, right? That you can't have both together. Like, you can't believe in God or whatever faith you may be, as well as understand and talk about mental health. Like, how do those become so separate?
I don't know. Because it's not, as far as I know, it's not in the Bible. That's I don't know. But I do remember, like, oh, God, I had to be, I think I was in grad school and went to church, and the pastor said something about not needing to go to therapy. Like, you could just come, like, people, like, members could just come talk to him. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
This is wrong. Don't say that.
Yeah. Because both can happen, right? I think both there's definitely a lot of pastors that have done work with understanding mental health, like recognizing that it's not just being sad or whatever. Like, there's it's actually a chemical changes happening in the brain, and there's actually like strategies you need to work on, right? But I've also heard comments from kind of the other end, right? Where people have gone to like, how am I saying this right? Faith-based like therapists. And even in that good intention to kind of like, you know, marry the two things together, where it just ends up still shifting of just like pray, just continue praying and praying and praying.
Yeah.
And praying. And I don't want to take away from prayer, because I think prayer is a form of mindfulness, right? It can be a form of gratitude, which ultimately can help your mental health.
Right, exactly.
But it's also doesn't, I don't think, helps people acknowledge and recognize the root cause as to what's happening.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's an in-the-moment thing. It's not, it doesn't dig into.
Yeah. So what do you think should be starting that shift and movement within that space of religion and mental health, especially for young people who are growing up in religious households or religious spaces that are having a hard time like differentiating, or how do they feel like they can feel heard within the religious community about their own challenges?
Right. I think it would be cool if there was some kind of a mental health professional connected to every church that not necessarily, I guess provided services to the pastor or the priest and the members of the church, but also like maybe did workshops. I think anything that makes mental health seem less scary and more understandable, more like tangible, like people can like, oh, that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
I think it just seems so far away and like God is not in it because you're talking to someone else about stuff. Or even like what you kind of were saying about praying and the gratitude, like if you're complaining about being sad, then that means that you're not grateful for the things you do have. And they're not one in the same.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think maybe just having some kind of more education around it, more education, maybe even some like mental health workshops for like the leaders of the churches and stuff, so that they understand and they're able to recognize things in their people who come to their church. Like if you're seeing like this person is always crying, maybe they just are moved, but maybe they have something going on and you need to ask them a question. And maybe you can handle it as a pastor, but maybe you need to refer them to someone else too.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It helps to make it more accessible, right? If it's something that's kind of already connected with the church, we're coming here 2-3 times a week. This is also something that's included within the church structure that also allows it to be more accessible to you if you need that resource, right? You need that kind of support and helps it not feel so separate. That makes sense. That's a good idea. One additional thing when it comes to when I think of mental health and students in the community is their actual environment, right? And how that plays a whole big fun game, right? I think of like ACEs and I think of like trauma. So talk to us a little bit about that, like how you have seen the impact of one's community on their development.
I mean, community plays a huge impact. It's one of those, like, is it even what's going on in your house or is it what's going on your block or in your street? In the last community that I worked in, there was a lot of violence. There was a lot of, just a lot of all of the things that I think people think about when they think about bad neighborhoods. And some of the students would bring that stuff in, whether they knew it or not. You know, they would come. Some of them were just, like, angry or sad. Or just didn't know how to navigate those feelings. And it was just kind of like, well, someone got shot outside my house last night. And maybe I don't know the person, but like the gunshots kept me up. You know, so community. It's a heavy.
It is. Heavy. The first time I really, it was actually my first time in education. I was out in L.A. working on Watts, and it was just very eye-opening for me. One, when I get there, like you're taking a tour of the campus, and they're like, on this side of the school is this gang. On this side of the school is this gang. And this gang is over here, right? The staff. They're just like letting you know, right? But then even the students, like, one, they're getting recruited for gangs in, like, fifth, sixth grade. Two, when they, like, see or hear cops, like, the things that they see, right? So they run up against the fence and joke around and put their hand behind their back like they're getting thrown up on a fence, right? Two, the actual violence that they see, right? Where they're on a playground and they see, they're playing and they see someone pull out a gun and shoot someone. And everyone has to run inside and it's a whole big thing, right? How often within their own spaces they know of someone that has died from gun violence and stuff. And how that has a true impact on their mental health. And it's like, knowing that in those schools, right? And then it's like, well, how are we not attending to that intentionally?
Exactly.
We know that everybody is now facing this community violence. We know everyone's kind of facing this community trauma. Why is that not something that we're intentionally helping students with, right? Because they're all facing it in some capacity, you know? What do we do, right? Like, what are we?
I feel like it starts in the community. Like, I think it has to be bigger than the school in that case. Like, it has to be, because the parents have to be involved, the other siblings, the community. Like, who are the people in the community that are leaders? Are there churches in the community? Are there nonprofits and other organizations that are doing something? And like, at this point, in some communities, they just need to do a thing. Thing, like have a back to school something. I don't know. Because it's like, like I said, every day these kids come into these buildings and they're, the walk to school sometimes is traumatizing.
100%. And how do we expect them to sit in a desk and focus on their math when they just saw someone get jumped on the way to school, right? Like, it's real, right? And it's not always like adults. Like, you're watching adults jump children. And they're watching, you
children
know.
Children jump children, yeah.
They're sprinting to school because they're trying to run away from something, right? Like, and then they'd be like, why don't you have your pencil? Why didn't you do your homework? Oh, again, you don't have it, right? And I'd be like, yo, leave me alone.
And some of the kids don't say leave me alone. And I know they want to.
Yeah.
And the ones who say it, then they have like a target on their back because now they're the kid that talks back.
And then it's like a disciplinary thing, right? And then there's consequences. So it's
then me as a social worker in the school was getting called like such and such as being disrespectful. And it's like,
We don't do enough of taking a step back to ask why. Why is it that they're doing this? Why is it that they're doing that? Is there anything that I can help support with? How can we also cultivate spaces where students feel comfortable telling us that kind of stuff, right?
If you don't have a pencil every day, why every day am I going to yell at you about it? Let me just buy you a damn box of pencils.
And if you go through it, screw it. I'm going to get you another one. Like, there are just, I think, stronger things to focus on and worry about when it comes to development. And it's not so much that, again, it's you're teaching them to not be responsible or teaching them whatever because they can't show up. But in both of our experience, you probably know that more often than not, people are not asking why.
Exactly.
Oh, they may ask why and I forgot. Oh, well, you seem to be forgetting a lot. Like, you know, let's have a chat after class just so we can, like, make sure we can set some things up. It just becomes a whole big thing. And I get it because teachers are stressed out. They're worked out. They got a class of 30 kids. It's hard to just focus on one. Like, but again, it's all of it is so connected, right? And I think in the short term, I think it's frustrating. But if we can get these things in place in the long term, there's actually more benefits.
Exactly. Yeah. but no one's thinking long term when like such and such didn't have a pencil again.
Yeah. And that's why for me, the work that I do is so important because I talk about this all the time, but when mental health in general, we're very reactionary, right? We kind of wait until something happens. You probably say as soon as we see our students when there's an issue and then we get tapped in to do it, right?
Yes.
And it's like, well, what about the rest of the students? Like, how can I make sure that they all understand their mental health? They're all like understanding what skills and strategies they need to learn about their emotions because we all have feelings. We all have stuff, right?
Right.
But when we say that or we go to people and we try to talk about it, it's like, well, you can do like a workshop.
Yeah.
How about you just do like one of the like, you know, community lessons or something? Yeah. It's like, that's not how this works, right? Yeah. Or even teachers, you know, want to do it in one space. Like, oh, can you help my class? Like, I really want my class to like start doing something. I'm like, sure, I'd love to, but recognize that you're not going to see the full benefits because once they leave your classroom, it's not happening anywhere else.
Yeah, right.
Once they leave the school building, it's not happening anywhere else, right? And I think if anything now with, you know, being in a global pandemic and shifting into this like virtual learning space, community has become so important, right? Because now school is no longer the structure that we once knew it to
be. Right.
It is now shifted and changed so much.
Yeah.
You know? So when it comes to, again, thinking about like services, how can we as a community really start coming together and having these fruitful conversations so change starts to happen, right? So our young people can feel like they can thrive, right? And that we can have these kinds of conversations.
Right. I don't know. there just has to be a conversation, I feel like, from the people in the community of like, there has to be more resources, there has to be programming, because a lot of kids aren't going to go to school, go to the physical school building anymore. So like, what can be in place? Is it just a virtual thing? Are we able to create in-person spaces so they can still have their social and emotional skills? Are they interacting with other peers? And how can we do that safely, one, because of the pandemic, and two, because of some of these communities aren't safe.
Right.
So, like, how can we still create these places for them if they're not going into the building?
Right, and continue to do it. I think it also gets hard is that programs start and things in the community start, but they don't always continue on.
Right.
Or they're limited funding, so they're only allowed a certain amount of students, right? Or one thing that really gets me sometimes about services is there's like a GPA attached to it. And it's like, well, you have to have this kind of grade or whatever to get access to whatever.
You have to be this kind of student.
And I'm like, so then why are we just like excluding all these other students
who need
it? That was one thing that like really like boggled my mind when it came down to like understanding like programs. But I'm like, how do we then build up those students who maybe are not at that GPA or whatever so that they can eventually become that kind of student that you would quote unquote want in your program?
Right.
Who's happening with them?
Exactly.
What's going on, you know?
I was thinking about what you were saying about it has to be a program that continues or something that continues. I think we have to stop looking at it as like, a reaction. I feel like some of these programs happen because there's a reaction to a thing. And realizing that like mental health is important for all people, especially kids, especially now.
Yes.
Like their whole lives have shifted in the last few months in a way that I don't know that anybody's really asking some of them these questions of like how are they feeling and, and really getting into that stuff. And so creating programs that are going to last their whole, even adulthood.
Right.
So that they can like just, you know, get out of childhood and adolescence and feel supported and nurtured.
Right. Right.
And then be like, I can be a regular adult, even though I went through a pandemic and got snatched out of school in March.
Right, right. I can still feel like I can thrive.
Right, exactly.
That I can continue to like move through my life feeling supported, right? Because that's how you ultimately like can be successful. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't, you can't just do it by yourself.
At all.
You have, there has to be different levels of protective factors in place. And a lot of that comes from that supportive community. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard when, and you might've seen this too, where like the kids are 12, 13 and they are just already getting so wrapped up in the community.
Yeah.
And school is nowhere near their mind.
Yeah.
Nowhere near.
I mean, I'm talking, we had like 9 and 10 year olds.
Oh, really?
And it's like, you are in the fourth grade.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, trying to be on the streets.
Trying to be on the streets.
Yeah.
Because everybody in my house is on the streets or doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
Just me and my one sister go to school, and like, she's in middle school, I'm in elementary school. My brothers hang out and they're cool and I want to be like them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had this child that I'm thinking about said like, well, I'm going to go to jail anyway, so it doesn't matter. Mm. And I was like, well, why do you even think that that's where you're going to go? And he was like, that's just where everyone in my family goes.
Mm.
And it's like, we like,
yeah,
but had a, you know, parent pulled him out to school.
Oh, the same one.
And, yeah. And kind of because he started to open up and talk about things. And then it was like,
they got uncomfortable.
They got uncomfortable. It was like, now you know too much. Y'all gonna call ACS or Child Protective Services or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, no, he's gonna go stay somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's the hard part, I think, about working with students is like those situations where you're like, they need something. And they are just, they're succumbing to their environment, right? And when you have the adults in their lives are telling them school is important, or they say it's important, do your homework, but then you're not really reinforcing the importance of school anyway.
You don't ask me questions about school.
Yeah. Or you literally say, don't ask me no questions.
No, I can't help you anyway.
Right?
My mom used to tell me that. I can't help you with your homework, but do it. I'm like, okay.
My mom was a, my mom, single mother, three kids, worked a lot, but education was like the top priority, right? So even when I was, I think like six, our house foreclosed, we didn't have a house to go to, so we lived in her friend's basement, all five of us, including my grandma, in just like one big room, probably like as big as like where we are now, like it wasn't big, right? I remember being a kid, and I was so upset. I remember I went to try to sleep an entire day because I just didn't want to like face my reality. It didn't work. I think I woke up with no matter how hard I tried, I was just like not waking up. But even then, my mom was still sending us to Catholic school because in the town I grew up in, the public school was not great. And she was like, I can't afford for us to go live someplace else, but at least I can try and put pennies together for you to go to this Catholic school. She always owed money. Was never on time with the tuition payments, right? And everyone's telling her like, you know, you're crazy. Take them out of that private school or Catholic school. Put them in the public school. You'll get so much more money back. Like, you don't even have a house right now. What are you doing? Right. And she's like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. But it's, I don't remember where I was going. I lost the train of thought. But the importance of like, that's where it goes. Homework.
Yeah.
So even when she was like working a lot, right. I remember, we had to lay out our books on stack them on top of each other, our homework. And then the top one had to be our agenda. So she had to know what we had to do. And if we had something wrong, if we skipped over some, no matter what time, get up, go downstairs. This is wrong. Erase it. Fix it. 2 o'clock in the morning, she was like, you're not going to school like this.
Oh.
And she would tell the story that like her friends at work would be like, you know, Marlene, why are you doing that? If they get a zero, that's them. Like, they're the student. She's like, no, that's not what this is. Like, I'm not having my children go to school thinking they could just do subpar work and like, it's fine. That's not how life is. So it was beneficial, but I recognized. So for me, it was like really weird. Well, now I'm going into like spaces with students as the adult. I'm just like, these parents, I'm like, y'all just don't know. No. You just throw up with your hands. And like, well, what do you want me to do?
Something. You know, anything.
Something. It's challenging.
Kids would be like, you want to read this? And I'm like, ooh. Who looked at this?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Oh. Yeah. Or something I've had when I was in working with third graders, a parent did their third graders' math homework. And then tried to lie about it. And I'm like, third grade handwriting is very particular.
Yeah.
This is very neat.
Right. And I've seen this children's writing.
Exactly.
It's not the same.
April. Like, I've been seeing this kid's work for a very long time. And just be like, no, I didn't do it.
Yeah, you did.
One, this kid doesn't know math. Two, this handwriting.
Right. So it's like that mix of like,
you're trying to be slick. Nobody
don't do it for them, but help them.
Think about what you're teaching them. Like, what is that teaching them? You know?
My mom's just going to do it.
Then they get older, be like, my mom's just going to handle it. My mom will fix
it. Or they'll find somebody else to handle
it. Yeah, yeah. So where do we start, right? And I know I've kind of said this already, but I think now when we've kind of dove into like talking about education, mm-hmm. talking about religion, talking about the home, talking about like the community environment, right. Where do we start? Like, what has to happen for all of these pieces to start like coming together to go in the puzzle?
Right. I think the important part is realizing that they all go as part of the puzzle. Like, I think that's step
that's
one.
Fair. That's fair.
Is like that. I think
everything is so disjointed. Mm-hmm. So disjointed.
Yeah, like school talks to the family, but is the school talking to the church or the community mm-hmm. center or whatever after school program that the kid is in? Maybe not. And so maybe some way that like join all of these pieces together. Because then it's like a unit in a real like village supporting a child.
Yes, that village.
Versus five different pieces or whatever, mm-hmm. all saying and doing different things, all different ways.
Yeah.
And then it's confusion.
And everyone's frustrated.
Right.
Everyone's just frustrated. Right. Like, we're frustrated with the service provider. The service provider is frustrated with the family. Mm-hmm. The family's frustrated with the teacher. The teacher won't stop calling them. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of these go together.
Right.
Right. Right. And we would try to like have like meetings where everybody kind of comes together.
Right.
But those were few and far between. Right. They're not consistent.
Yeah.
And then again, who else is involved in the student's life? And how can we get everybody at the table? Right. But also how it's not feasible to do that with every single student. Right.
Right.
So then how can we do this on a bigger scale, right? Mm-hmm. What does that look like? Is it having actual community meetings where you have all of the representatives from school districts coming, all of the community organizations mm-hmm. coming, all of the church leaders coming, right? Mm-hmm. The bodegas, like, come together.
Because you see each other. You are all interacting with these kids at some point in a day, maybe multiple times a day.
Yeah. And even like in changing, right? The school is maybe not just for the kids, it's for the community members too,
right?
The parents can come and take language classes mm-hmm. or if you want to have lunch sponsored by the market down the street
exactly.
or something, right?
Yeah.
And you see that person you go and get breakfast from every morning and you're late to school, but now they're at your school, like, and you're so excited, right? That is kind of how you kind of start, I think, to help and help students recognize that everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
We're all here to support you. Right. We're all here to help you grow.
Right.
Right. And that it doesn't
We're all speaking the same language and have the same vision and mission for you. And we also want the student to be a part of that.
Right.
You want them to be a part of their, their life.
Yeah. But I think you're right that it has to start with this awareness
mm-hmm.
and then like, then once we all got it, right, we're all kind of on the same accord.
Right.
We all understand, right, hey, mental health is a thing, supporting the child, the social emotional portions of it. Like, it's not just, you know, the physical components of, like, whatever. Now, once we got the awareness, how can we now continue this conversation mm-hmm. together for all of the young people within our community?
Right.
It's challenging, though.
It is. It's challenging. It's a lot of work. And I feel like it's, like, new.
Mm-hmm.
Even new in a way of, like, the conversations happen and then they stop.
Right.
They only, like I said, they're reactionary. Mm-hmm. They happen when there's a thing.
Right.
And then we don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's forever.
Mm-hmm. Or there's a competition.
Yeah.
There's all this competition between community programs for students.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, why?
Because it's not enough money. So everyone's fighting for the money.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You always follow the money. That's what they say, right? Follow the money. If you want to know where it's the issue, follow the money. Follow the money. So do you have any like final thoughts or advice for people who might be mm-hmm. listening in when they're maybe either trying to seek out services, mm-hmm. right, for their student or for their student? How do they go about looking for services?
Right.
Like, what does it look like to get involved within the community for their mental health?
That's a great question. I say that if you're a student and you're trying to find some stuff, ask your friends. I feel like word of mouth and like, are mm-hmm. your friends in anything?
Mm-hmm.
And like, maybe think about the friends that you're mm-hmm. asking.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the friends that are not doing things.
Right.
But like, if you know that people are like a part of something, ask them what it is. And even if they're not your friend, maybe there's somebody you just go to school with. Like, inquire. And then do a really good Google search
mm-hmm.
and see what's mm-hmm. in your community. Or maybe the next community over, you know, like something that you can get to that's accessible.
Yeah, her TikTok is good. There's actually like community providers on TikTok.
I heard that TikTok.
Like therapists on TikTok, like doing things. Yeah.
I heard TikTok is not just videos.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, my friend's like, no, I've learned a lot from TikTok. I'm like,
why do you have TikTok? People are trying to get me to make a TikTok. I'm like, another time. Yeah, yeah.
And then I would say for like parents or people in the community, same. Do a good Google search, ask people. And if there's not a thing, create it. I mean, like if a group of parents say like, hey, we want to provide, I don't know, we want to have a therapist come run groups for our kids.
Right.
Find a local therapist, ask them, say like, hey, we're a group of parents. We have 10 kids. Can you come do some work with them? Because they've been in the house since March and are driving us crazy and probably are driving themselves crazy.
Yeah.
Can they like have a few sessions before school starts or during the school year? We'll pay you. We can't really pay you, or maybe we could pay you like $10 a kid. Will you do it? I'm sure somebody will.
Right.
Like I'm sure somebody would be like, yeah, actually I could do that. Like I can take an hour out of my week to run a group for kids.
Yeah.
Maybe outside, like they could get some air.
Some yoga. Yeah. Some stuff like that. Yeah. Painting.
It doesn't help to ask, and it doesn't help to just create it.
Yeah. That's a good point.
It doesn't hurt to ask. And it doesn't hurt to just create it. Like make it yourself.
Yeah.
Or like even the parents can say, or like anyone in the community, like even the local church can say, like, oh, okay. We didn't have like vacation Bible study or whatever this summer, but we can do like some kind of youth program where 10 of them, they wear masks, they social distance, whatever the case may be, and they come together and they do a thing.
Yeah. That's a really great idea.
Just people just gotta do something.
They gotta do something. They gotta do something. I think there's a lot of talking.
Yeah.
And there is some action. I don't wanna discredit people that are doing things. Right. But I think there always can be things that can be done more. Mm-hmm. And I think helping people just recognize and become more aware of what those things are. But I think empowerment is important. So empowering the parents, empowering the students, right?
Yeah,
to create the kids, something, do something, right? And then being able to use your voice and say, like, this is a problem. We need to fix it. Mm-hmm. Let's come together and make some change. Right. That's that community stuff, right? Yeah. Like, that's how you really start making those changes.
Right, because even, like, if the parents come up with the idea and they don't have the space, who can I ask for space?
Right.
I can ask the school. No one's using. I mean, they're not using that at certain hours.
Yeah.
You can, if the school has a gym or, like, a cafeteria.
Yeah.
Cafeteria is not going to be a thing anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe do it in there.
Right.
Oh, it's raining, but we still want to have this group. Can the six of us come and use the cafeteria?
Mm-hmm.
Or can we use
the church? Or the YMCA. Or the YMCA. You know, things like that.
There's like a, where I used to work, there's like a workspace. Mm-hmm. Can we use that?
Right.
We can't pay the $1 million that you're charging, but can we give you like a donation and maybe post about it and advertise it to our friends?
Yeah. Gotta get creative.
You gotta get creative and think outside of the box.
Yeah, because the box right now is not working.
Right.
Smashed. Right. It's not even a box.
The box is like, wait, there's a pandemic? Yeah, what do we do now?
I know.
You gotta figure it out.
Get creative.
Yeah, you have to get creative.
Yeah. All right.
Now I have so many ideas. I'm like, I can create
them. I mean, sis, you got a whole private practice. Right. And that's what we're going to next, right? So telling us about like what... intricate details about what you do and then how people can support you, how they can find you, all of that good stuff.
Okay. So I provide right now I'm just providing individual mental health services to children, adolescents, and adults. Mm-hmm. Well, I mostly work with women of color, which I found is interesting that a lot of them have now come to this space where they're like, I can go to therapy. I can talk about my stuff. I got some things that I need to work on. Mm-hmm. And so I love it. It's a beautiful thing. A lot of it is about like race at work, you know, which is like my thing because of my experiences. Mm-hmm. So it's just been, you know, giving people a space to be seen and to be heard because some of us grew up in these, you can't talk about it homes. And so now it's like, I need to talk about this stuff because whether I dealt with it when I was six or not, it's coming back up.
Yeah.
And so like, now what am I going to do with it? How am I going to not keep experiencing these feelings or these same situations?
Yeah.
So that is what I do. You can find me on, I mean, I'm on like all of the sites. Just look up Joy with an I, Brit.
Yeah.
I'm on like Therapy with Black Girls, Psychology Today. Or you could look up Life Intentionally Psychotherapy Services.
Love it. And then your podcast, right?
Yes.
And that's about, what are you, some things you talk about in your podcast?
Well,
it's not just social work, right?
It's not just social work. It's like life. It's really like, well, it started as my journey of life after the loss of my boyfriend. And it's just been kind of like what we talked about earlier, like being a social worker and providing mental health services while also dealing with my own mental health and like what that has looked like, and then just like life, like dating and money and friendships,
all of it,
all of it, all of it, and like normalizing that like I talk about my therapist and I, know, it's normalizing those conversations. Like, therapy is not a scary thing. It's really just talking to a person about your stuff, yourself.
Yep. It's someone dedicated to you, to listen to you complain.
Yeah. And or even like say like, I'm doing all right, and that's weird.
Yeah.
And like exploring why that is weird for you to feel like you're good.
Yeah.
So,
and that's on what? That's on Spotify.
That's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher.
Okay. All the good stuff.
All of it.
It's
all of them.
Yes, yeah.
iHeartRadio, yeah.
Oh, love it. Nice. Love it. Well, I think this was an amazing conversation.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, thank you for being here. Happy early birthday again.
Thank you.
By the time this is out, your birthday will have passed. But
yeah,
they'll
be like, your birthday, so happy early birthday to you.
Thank you. Embracing it. I love being able to talk about the different ways to support students, as well as not just talk about the problems, but also what are some solutions, right, as we are working towards action. So I'm excited for what's to come. If people are listening, I hope they take some action from what we talked about. And we'll see what's coming up next.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.